Chapter 8. There were 18 people in the landing party. Of them, Desai and her co-pilot, Lieutenant Devereaux, were aboard the dropship and had plenty of oxygen. Hopefully by now the four people who had been exploring outbuildings were back aboard the dropship also. That left the 12 people in Chang's party, who were in armor suits with a limited supply of oxygen. 12 people who could not wait 7 days. 12 people trapped on the moon, compared to 52 on the Flying Dutchman. 12 people in certain peril, against the lives of 52 I would be risking if I ordered our star cruiser to tangle with 3 Kristang warships. It was not as simple as Theranan technology versus Kristang. The Kristang had stolen and adapted Theranan technology over the years, and in terms of weapons and shields, the ships were not far enough apart for my comfort. Also, the Kristang ships were dedicated, true warships designed for space combat, while our Dutchman was basically a truck. Star carriers were not supposed to engage in direct combat with other ships. They were supposed to use their superior jump capability to run away and let other ships handle the fighting for them. 12 lives against 52. The math wasn't that simple, because if the Dutchmen were disabled or destroyed in combat, the entire landing party would die, including Desai's people aboard the dropship. Then it would be all 70 people dead. The Dutchmen could jump away safely, saving the 52 lives currently aboard and continuing the mission. If at some point the Kristang ships were busily engaged in war games and far enough away from the moon, it might be possible for Desai to bring the dropship up from the surface, trusting the dropship's stealth field. We might be able to time her climb from the surface with a precise jump by the Dutchman for us to pick up the dropship and be on our way before the Kristang could intercept us. That would save an additional 6 lives. 12 against 58, then. In military sense, it was 12 people against the continuation of the mission. If math were the only question, my decision would be easy. Since I was a monkey and not a cyborg, raw numbers were not the only consideration. The real question was whether we could destroy, or at least disable, those 3 Kristang warships long enough for us to retrieve the landing party and escape. We needed a plan, and for that we needed information. We needed greater situational awareness. Skippy, where are those ships in relation to us? Distance, I mean. Can you show that on the display? Skippy sighed. It is on the display. If you weren't such a dumb monkey, you would see it. Fine, here. I added lines, showing the distance in light seconds. Yellow lines and numbers appeared on the display screen. See how easy that was, Skippy? This is great. Thank you. The battlecruiser is 37 light seconds from us, and the 2 destroyers are another 68 light seconds beyond the battlecruiser. Correct. Do you want a prize for reading the display, Joe? Huh? No, I'm thinking. Huh, I find that unlikely. Skippy, I'm trying to be serious here. The landing party is running out of oxygen. 3 ships, huh? Can you do the trick again that you did when we got to Earth? Take over those 3 ships with the nanovirus? Skippy had learned, after we spilled blood and lost people capturing our Kristang frigate, the Heavenly Morning Flower of Glorious Victory, that the sneaky Theranan had planted a nanobot virus aboard most Kristang ships. The ships became infected when they hitched a ride on a Theranan star carrier. Better than a simple virus hidden in computer code, the nanobots could quickly assemble and take physical control of Kristang systems. Since the Kristang, long wary of their systems being infiltrated by their Theranan patrons, had designed their ship computers to resist digital hacking, a physical takeover was the only option. No. I wish I could, Joe. The situation is not favorable for me to repeat that particular action. Because you are going to ask me a bunch of ignorant questions about why I can't do it, I will save both of us the time and explain now. You will hopefully remember me telling you that I need to be relatively close to a Kristang ship to make that trick work. Although I did remember him telling me something about the subject, I did not remember exactly what he said. Something about light seconds? Something like that, yes. The Theranan developed the nanovirus to protect their star carriers from attempted takeover by Kristang ships that were being transported. It is a short-range technology, not intended for fleet actions. I can somewhat extend the range at which the nanovirus can be activated and controlled, but not far enough to reach any of those 3 ships from our current location. Whoa. Hey, wait a minute. I call BS on that. You took over those two Kristang ships at Earth, and one of them was on the other side of the planet. Yes, duh. Earth is a small ball of dirt, and both of those ships were in low orbit, well within my envelope of influence. Do I have to remind you what an enormous distance a light second is? Larger than you apparently think. All right. Is there any chance our fancy stealth technology will let us sneak close enough to that cruiser? No. I waited for him to say more. He didn't. No? Could you tell me a bit more? Why? You don't understand anything about the technologies involved. Skippy, don't be an ass. Fine. Yes, I do not understand the technologies. It's not only you, Joe. Don't feel bad about it. None of you grubby monkeys have the slightest clue as to how any of this high-tech stuff truly works. Before you stumble over an attempted snappy reply, I have applied my incredible resources to wargaming how we might deal with those three ships, and I do not see any reasonable possibility of success. We can handle either the battlecruiser or the pair of destroyers, not both. Whichever target we do engage first will certainly jump away to the outer edge of the system and bring back the full Kristang force. There are an additional 13 warships out there waiting for a star carrier. Those 13 ships, even though they are Kristang ships of considerably lesser technology, would make it impossible for us to retrieve the landing force. I am sorry, Joe. There is simply no way to do this. Major Sim spoke up from the CIC. This may be a stupid question, but we are in a Theranan vessel. Could we simply order the Kristang to jump away? Jump to the edge of the system? That is not a stupid question, Skippy answered. Major Tammy. Joe, you could learn from her how not to ask stupid questions. Unfortunately, the answer is no. The Kristang are unlikely to obey such an unusual order from the Theranan. They would find it highly suspicious. For a star carrier to enter the gravity well of a star system is unusual enough. The Kristang would also find it highly unusual that our star carrier has only one ship attached. What the Kristang would very likely do, by very likely I mean I am 100% certain, is make only a short jump to keep eyes on what the Theranan are doing here. As soon as they saw Theranan activity near a moon which contains an elder site, they would jump one ship away to get reinforcements and jump the other two ships in close enough to see what we are doing. There is no trust between the Kristang and the Theranan. Crap, I said. I'd like one thing out here to be easy for a change. No way I was giving up, either. I looked at the display, pondering what to do. Hey, those two destroyers look like they're very close to each other. Practically touching, I said, playing with the controls and zooming in on the destroyers. That's an illusion created by the display, right? Ships don't actually travel that close to one another. Yes, and no. Ships do not normally travel so closely. With the tremendous speeds involved in space combat, a tiny navigation error could quickly cause ships to collide. In this case, however, those two destroyers truly are practically on top of each other. It is not something I am manipulating to make the display easier for monkeys to understand. Those two ships are preparing to practice a maneuver in which one ship tucks itself inside another ship's stealth field. One of the ships has to turn off its stealth field, because unless two stealth fields are kept perfectly in tune, they interfere with each other. Encasing two ships in one stealth field allows two ships to appear on an enemy's detection systems as a single ship. At some point, the ships can separate and surprise the enemy by moving in different directions. This maneuver is extremely difficult and dangerous. The task force commander is making those ships practice the maneuver because he expects their captains to fail and, possibly as a bonus, for the ships to be damaged. That would cause the two captains to lose face, giving the commander a convenient excuse to replace them with officers loyal to him. Remind me not to apply for a position in the Kristang Navy, I said distractedly. The kernel of an idea was forming in my head. How close are those two ships to each other? 400 meters, Skippy stated. In space combat terms, they are practically on top of each other. It is very risky. Huh. And whatever happens to the battlecruiser, those destroyers won't know about it for 68 seconds, right? When the light gets there? You are a true genius, Joe. Your name should be Einstein. Uh-huh. I ignored his taunt. And how long after we get close to a Kristang ship until you can take control of it with this nanovirus thing? Oh, 15 or 20 seconds for complete control. The ship will be immobilized within 7 seconds. Speed of light isn't an issue there. The effect I create is instantaneous, for incredibly magical reasons that monkey brains can't understand. Yeah, whatever. Once we emerge from a jump, we have to wait a bit before we can jump again, right? Oh, boy. I hate to do this, Joe. Burst your bubble like this. You are thinking we can jump in close to the battlecruiser and I can activate the nanovirus to seize control of the battlecruiser. Then, before the destroyers know what has happened, we jump again over to them and I take control of them also, right? Ha! Forget it. I told you, monkeys should not do any thinking, you're not good at it. And I also already told you I have run every possible variable through my ginormous brain, and there is no way for us to take on all three of those ships without at least one, likely two of them getting away and bringing back reinforcements. Four of the ships are about to leave, but remember, the Therenin Star Carrier isn't arriving until the 36-hour mark, and there are a lot of Kristang ships right at the edge of this star system. They could cause us a world of hurt. Listen, he shushed me as I opened my mouth to speak. Let me finish talking. I talk, you listen. Me smart, you monkey. Joe, your idea... Ugh, damn, I hate to abuse the word idea by associating it with anything that comes out of your brain. Your idea won't work. After we emerge from a jump, we can't jump again for almost 80 seconds. I call bullshit on that, Skippy. I said more confidently this time. When we were shadowing that Therenin battle group so you could download data from them, you found out there may be a Maxolt ship in the area and you jumped us away. Then we did another jump right away. Another jump in like a few seconds. At that time, we jumped again within 22 seconds to be precise. Yes, Joe, we can manage a second jump in less than 80 seconds. What we can't do is jump with any precision after waiting less than 80 seconds. When I thought a Maxolk's ship might be stalking us, I didn't care where we jumped to as long as we jumped away. In this case, you want us to quickly jump in very close to those two destroyers, and that is not possible. A jump creates a vibration in the jump coils, an unpredictable quantum fluctuation that affects space-time immediately around the ship. In order to program a precise jump, we have to wait for the vibration to settle down. That means we will not be able to jump close to those destroyers before the gamma ray burst of our jumping in next to the battlecruiser reaches the destroyers. As soon as those destroyers detect the gamma ray burst, they will jump away and we'll lose them. So, now that I have attempted to smack some knowledge on a monkey, what do you say to that? You done? Yep. You sure? I don't want to spoil your fun, Skippy. You sound like you're getting super enjoyment out of insulting us monkeys. Yep. I'm sure. Please, Joe, please, dazzle me with your genius idea. I haven't had a good laugh in a while. Good, I said, because if you had shut up and listened to me for a second, you would have heard my idea already. Here it is. We jump in near the battlecruiser. You take control of it with the nanovirus. Then you make the battlecruiser jump over right on top of those two destroyers and set it to self-destruct, like blow its drive coils or something, as soon as it emerges from the jump. That will at least disable those two destroyers temporarily, and we can then jump in and finish them off with missiles after our jump system is ready again. The battlecruiser will have its jump coils charged for an emergency jump. It won't have to wait 80 seconds. Will that work? Silence. Then Skippy said simply, "Damn. Damn it!" After waiting a moment for him to say something more, I lost patience. "Skippy. Hello. Listen. If you're taking your time to think up a list of insults because my idea is stupid, how about you just tell me now, and we can set aside time later for you to bust my balls about it, okay?" "I hate my life. This sucks," he grumbled. "This is so unfair." "What is unfair?" "Joe, I do not know how this happened. I do not know how this could be possible given the laws of physics. Somehow, you came up with a good idea. You, a monkey. Oh, I am so humiliated. I hate my life. I crunched billions of variables and came up with nothing. No way to take out all three of those ships. Then a freaking monkey says, 'Duh, how about this idea?' off the top of its stupid freaking monkey head." He sounded truly, completely miserable. "Joe, if I had a nose, I could blow it, and what comes out would be smarter than your entire species combined. Yet somehow you... of all beings, comes up with a good idea. Unbelievable." Uh-huh, I said slowly. So, Skippy, it's like when you had the genius idea for us to raid the asteroid, but you forgot the fact that humans need spacesuits in space? Enjoy the moment, monkey boy. It won't happen again, he grumbled. Are you taking bets on that, Skippy? Oh, shut up. I hate you, stupid monkeys. I love you too, Skippy. Can you program a jump for us to get us close enough to that battlecruiser? Yes, damn it, I'll program a jump so we can do your stupid plan. Stupid? I thought you said my plan was not stupid. It isn't, he said so quietly that I could barely hear him. What? I said with a grin, looking through the glass at people in the CIC. I couldn't hear you, Skippy. This plan, a plan from a monkey brain, is not stupid? No. What is the opposite of stupid, I wonder? Smart. The opposite is smart. There, I said it. You happy now? Damn! My life is already miserable enough. At times like this, I am nostalgic about those years I spent buried in the dirt on Paradise. Oh, those days were so sweet. Peaceful. Quiet. No screeching monkeys. Just program the jump, Skippy. Please. 26 hours, 24 minutes after the Kristang Task Force jumped in, four of their ships jumped away, leaving us behind the battlecruiser and two destroyers. Somehow, I was able to order us to wait another agonizing 20 minutes to be sure those four ships were safely a long way away before I ordered us into action. We jumped in close to the battlecruiser, close enough to be comfortably within Skippy's effective range, far enough not to trigger a panicky, immediate jump away by the Kristang ship. As soon as we emerged from the jump, Skippy transmitted a supposedly secret Theranan code, instructing the Kristang to hold position and maintain communication silence. There was a Giraptha cruiser in the area, Skippy told the Kristang, pretending to be the Theranan commander. Damn it, Skippy grumbled in frustration. They just queried me back after I ordered them very sternly to keep quiet. What's their weapon status? I asked anxiously. As part of the deception, we had our defensive shields down, leaving us vulnerable to enemy fire. The lesser technology of the Kristang would not matter much at such short range. Their masers, particle beams, and railguns could close the gap fast and hurt the Dutchmen badly. When Skippy recommended we not raise shields, I had questioned that idea. Skippy convinced me that a shielded Theranan ship jumping in super close to the Kristang would very likely trigger an immediate jump away by the battlecruiser. We needed the Kristang to hesitate just long enough for Skippy to activate the nanovirus and seize control of the battlecruiser. They are spinning up missile guidance systems, and they now have four maser batteries and one railgun locked onto us. The railgun capacitors are charging up now. Man, there is zero trust between those two species. I'm trying a softer tactic, explaining the situation rather than issuing orders. Well, that didn't work. A kinder, gentler Theranan apparently isn't believable. The Kristang commander is ordering a jump and signaling the two destroyers to follow him, but 3, 2, 1. Too late, suckers. Ha! I now have complete control of that battlecruiser through the nanovirus, Joe. Their jump drive is conveniently charged. Reprogramming jump coordinates now. Oh, man. There is panic aboard that ship. They're trying to eject drones containing their flight logs. I'm blocking that. They're also trying to launch missiles manually. I'm holding the missile launch tube outer doors closed. Ready for jump. I indulged in one last look at the battlecruiser on the main display. In the dim, sullen light of the red dwarf star, the ship looked evil. All hard angles, protruding weapons, and sensor stations, with nothing about the shape of the ship that wasn't purely functional. Kristang ship designers seemed to have gone out of their way to make their warships ugly. Do it, Skippy. The battlecruiser disappeared from the display. The problem with this plan was the same as the advantage of the plan. The two destroyers were far enough away that the light from our jump in near the battlecruiser, the signal from the Kristang Task Force commander, and the distinctive gamma-ray burst of the battlecruiser jumping away all traveled so comparatively slowly that the battlecruiser should have jumped in on top of the destroyers before the light arrived there. According to the plan, the pair of destroyers would only see the image of the battlecruiser from light that was 68 seconds out of date. They would see light that showed the battlecruiser all by itself doing whatever it was doing, and the next thing those destroyers saw would be the battlecruiser jumping in almost on top of them, jumping in, the spatial distortion of the inbound jump point violently rocking the destroyers, the roiling ripples of the inbound jump causing ripples in space-time that prevented the destroyers from jumping away to safety, and then the battlecruiser's reactors, missile warheads, and jump drive coils would have exploded, ripping the battlecruiser apart and causing catastrophic damage to the destroyers. By the time the gamma ray burst of our jump in near the battlecruiser reached the destroyers, after 68 seconds, the destroyers should have been in no condition to detect those gamma rays or do anything about it. According to the plan, that is. The problem with the plan was that after Skippy jumped the battlecruiser away, we wouldn't know whether the plan had worked for another 68 seconds when the light from the destroyer's position reached us. One thing I had considered was for us to jump near the destroyers as soon as possible to determine whether the plan worked or not. After considering, what I decided was to stay right where we are and bite my nails for 68 seconds. If we had jumped to get a quicker view and things went wrong somehow, it would be another 80 seconds before we could jump safely away again. That was too much risk for me. Maybe Adams was right. Maybe my inexperience at command made me more risk-averse than needed. I couldn't see the advantage of taking on more risk right then, and I kept telling myself that, every second, for 68 seconds. The plan could have gone wrong. When Skippy jumped the battlecruiser, he programmed it to jump to coordinates of where the pair of destroyers should have been at that time. Unfortunately, the information we had about the destroyer's location was also 68 seconds old. Damn, space combat is complicated. While we were seizing control of the battlecruiser, the destroyers could have moved unpredictably, and then the battlecruiser would have jumped into empty space. I made the rookie mistake of expressing that fear out loud at the 45-second mark. "I don't think that happened, Joe," Skippy assured me. "The task force commander was very strict. He ordered those destroyers to hold position, tucked inside one stealth field, until he ordered them to maneuver, which he hadn't yet done at the time we jumped in and took control of his ship. The last transponder signal from the destroyers showed they were exactly where they were supposed to be at the time. I have high confidence. Between your unsubstantiated fears and my rigorous statistical analysis, I'll take my numbers every time." While Skippy was talking, I momentarily took my eyes away from the countdown timer on the display. "That's great, Skip. And 68 seconds mark," Skippy shouted excitedly. "Detecting a gamma ray burst, exactly where it is supposed to be, and way more accurate a jump than the stupid lizards could have done on their own. Also, yes, detecting a reactor, missiles and jump drive coils exploding. The battlecruiser is gone. And yes, detecting secondary explosions. Give me a minute. There is a whole lot of noise in the sensor data. Yes. Yes. Successful. 100%. Both destroyers disabled. The battlecruiser jumped in slightly ahead of them. That is the best I could do with that inert lump of rock the Kristang used for a jump drive. The explosion caused severe damage to the forward section of both destroyer hulls." "Excellent." I breathed a sigh of relief. "Is it safe for us to jump in? Best we wait another 79 seconds for the debris cloud to clear the area. Otherwise, we might get whacked by something moving at high speed. Those destroyers are not going anywhere, Joe. Don't worry about that." "Got it. Program a jump for us, please, Skippy." "Pilot," I addressed Chen in the left-hand seat, "engage jump in 79 seconds. "Joe," Skippy said, "I have to admit that was a clever and inventive plan. In my research, I was unable to see any way we could take out all three ships. Now I know the factor that I was missing from my calculations. It did not occur to me to use one enemy ship as a weapon against the other enemy ships. That was clever. Especially for, you know, a monkey." I couldn't help chuckling. "Skippy, I assume you meant that as a compliment somehow, and since you suck at giving compliments, I will say thank you. We monkeys don't have big claws or sharp teeth, and we can't fly, and we're not particularly big or strong. We rely on being clever." Don't get used to it, Joe. You are, after all, only monkeys. This is hostile galaxy. Every spacefaring species out there has genetically or cybernetically enhanced intelligence, or both." "Like the Theranin, you mean?" "Exactly." "Yeah," I said, tapping the arm of the command chair. It was the only chair aboard the Star Carrier that fit humans without adjustment. The Theranin commanders must have liked the feeling of sitting in an extra-large chair. "Yet here we monkeys are in one of their ships. What do you think of that, Sergeant Adams?" Monkeys kick ass, sir, she grinned, and gave me an enthusiastic thumbs up. Damn straight. Crap, Skippy grumbled. Now you monkeys have gotten way too high an opinion of yourselves. I shouldn't have said anything. We jumped over the two stricken destroyers. They were both tumbling end over end, completely out of control. Skippy reported there were survivors aboard both ships, survivors busy trying to stay alive, and no threat to us. Sir, Adams asked from the CIC, shall we launch missiles? I could see her finger expectantly poised over a button. Those ships are still somewhat functional, Skippy? I asked, my jaw clenched. Can they manage a short jump? Not on their own, no, or they would have jumped away by now. However, I am now activating the nanovirus to take direct control of their jump drive systems. Both ships can manage one short jump. In their current condition, I must caution you, that will be their last jump. Their jump drive coils are badly out of alignment. Do it. I want to jump those ships into the upper atmosphere of that planet, deep enough that they can't climb out of the gravity well, high enough that the ships won't be crushed right away by the pressure. You can do that? Yes, certainly. The nanovirus is taking effect, he said slowly. Can I ask why you don't simply hit them with a pair of missiles? You can always ask, Skippy. Two reasons. First, we have a limited supply of missiles, and I don't want to expend ammo if we don't need to. That makes sense, sure. The second reason, which I suspect is more important? The second reason, Skippy, is that I've been to Earth recently. I saw what those lizards did to my home planet. Saw what they tried to do to my planet and my entire species. It's really simple, Skippy. I'm pissed, and I want the Kristang to experience the fear that humans felt. These Kristang, at least. You killed most of the Kristang on Earth before they realized what was happening. The ones that survived the initial strike huddled in their holes until you hit them with a hypersonic railgun. They were alive one moment and dead the next. When you jump these ships into the upper atmosphere, their crews will have a minute to realize what is happening as their ships plummet down towards the planet's core and are crushed by the increasing pressure. Think of this, Skippy, as my way of giving a middle finger salute to the Kristang on behalf of all the people on Earth. Oh, he said quietly. Ready now? Jump those ships into hell, Skippy. Done. Enhanced image in main display. On the display, the two destroyers flared into existence within the gas giant planet's upper atmosphere. Immediately, their hulls began glowing hot pink as they fell rapidly down, down, down toward the planet's core. Pieces began breaking off the ships, the larger pieces tumbling and spinning away. Quickly, we lost sight of the ships, even in the enhanced image, as they were swallowed up by the poisonous atmosphere. I held up my right hand and flipped the bird to the image on the display. Adios, MFers, I said quietly. Joe, Skippy said, you surprised me. That was spiteful of you. Skippy, you know me as the doofus who jokes around with you. I am that. You need to understand that is only part of who I am. Right now, first, I am a soldier. I'm going to defend my ship, my crew, and my species above all else, including getting a small measure of revenge once in a while. Got it. Especially since you acknowledge that you are a doofus. That remark managed to draw a smile from my lips as I watched the last pieces of the two destroyers disappear into the roiling clouds. I wouldn't have it any other way. People, let's retrieve our landing party before some other group of assholes shows up here and spoil the party. Major Sims, signal Captain Desai to proceed to the main site and for Colonel Chang to get his team moving toward the evac site. They can drop communication silence. I want a status report ASAP. The heavily encrypted tight beam transmissions would not reveal the presence of humans in the star system. Skippy, program a jump to take us over to that moon, please. Desai responded almost immediately after we jumped in near the moon again. Dutchman, we are off the ground. ETA at the main site is 4 minutes, she said, which meant she was really pushing the dropship speed. We could hear the strain in her voice. What happened up there? A Kristang task force jumped in uninvited. Apparently the planet is a popular refueling station. They must have the only clean bathrooms in this part of the galaxy. I find that hard to believe, sir, Desai laughed. That the planet is a gas station? I asked, confused. No, that any gas station has clean bathrooms. Oh, she made me laugh. Damn, She had been trapped on the moon's surface, out of communication, worried sick about the people stuck in their slowly suffocating spacesuits, and still she had the good spirits to make me laugh. "You are probably right about that, Captain," I replied. There were 7 Kristang ships in the task force. 4 of them jumped away to hitch a ride on a Theranan star carrier. "And the rest?" "Scratch 2 destroyers and 1 battlecruiser."
"Roger that, Dutchman. I'd love to hear the details later."
"Any damage to my ship?"
She understandably had referred to the Flying Dutchman as her ship. I didn't mind that at all. She had been flying the darn thing. I had only been given orders.
"No damage. We didn't even fire a shot."
"Wow. Now I have to hear about this."